The conditions at Rikers jail complex became more and more public earlier this month and earlier this year. Mayor Bill de Blasio basically was able to kind of escape the scrutiny and the criticism because a lot of these issues stem from previous administrations, right, particularly his predecessor, Bloomberg. But on Monday, you may have heard that the top federal prosecutor in Manhattan criticized the de Blasio administration for the first time and hinted that New York officials were not moving quickly enough to make reforms at Rikers Island. He warned that his office stood ready to file a civil rights lawsuit against the city to force changes. And he was also, the prosecutor referred to an article in the New York Times which laid out a key portions of a report on violence at Rikers Island that apparently had been withheld from federal investigators. And obviously that irked a lot of officials. So now the administration has to deal with that. Another issue the administration is going to be facing and is already feeling pressure about is the issue of vacant land throughout New York City. And that's something that we're going to be talking about with our next guest. That's Jarrett Murphy, the executive editor of City Limits, citylimits.org, the website of investigative journalism and reporting of issues around New York City. Jarrett, thank you. Good morning. It's great to have you on again. So we wanted to cover a few issues and draw our attention, the attention of our listeners to them. The first one being the Rikers situation. I read about it earlier this week that there's a good chance that there's going to be a civil rights lawsuit pending against the city. What can you tell us about this and how significant is this as a problem for the administration of Bill de Blasio?
I think, your lead-in says it all. I mean, it is a significant problem, and it very much is their problem now, too. You know, as you said, the report in the Times and by the U.S. Attorney's Office earlier in the summer were really about violence that occurred in 2011, 2012, maybe 2013 before de Blasio was in charge. The news this week was about a report that had been prepared during that time that basically what it did was it sort of picked apart a fake fall in violence that had been reported from one of the larger jails on Rikers Island. You know, Rikers Island is actually a complex of several jails. There was a jail where violence had been detected as a problem. It suddenly fell, and then it was realized that that those statistics weren't accurate. And this report, which was done internally by the city, blamed two corrections officials for not being aware enough of what was going on with the numbers. The commission or commissions of corrections at the time under Mayor Bloomberg, Dora Shuro, had that report cleaned up to avoid blaming those officials. Those officials were promoted to important posts in the de Blasio administration. And also Shuro's report that was, one might say doctored, was what was provided to the U.S. attorney as part of the kind of information dump that went with his investigation. So you have, elements of evidence being changed or insufficient evidence being provided by the Bloomberg administration, but then you also have the fact that the people who are kind of at the center of it are in positions of great influence and power within the correction department now under the new mayor.
Maybe you can outline a little bit of what you understand to be some of the serious problems. They talk about violence in the facilities, but what are some of the issues that actually have to be remedied that they're calling for, that these officials are calling for in terms of the urgent need for reform at Rikers?
Well, the problems, I mean, everything kind of ties together. A lot of it has to do with how correction officers patrol the hallways and the dormitories at Rikers, the use of force by corrections officers, their supervision by corrections captains and wardens, specifically how inmates with mental illness, who are an increasingly large percentage of the population at Rikers, how they're being handled, and particularly adolescents. One of the reforms that Mayor de Blasio talked about this week, and actually was kind of fascinating to hear about, was that he said that the city needs to be willing to go outside the civil service process to promote superior officers in the jail system, which for a very much a union-backed politician was an interesting thing to say. The idea being that when the corrections commissioner and the mayor are picking people to run this very complex, very important system, they shouldn't have to only go by people who've gone up through the ranks and taken the exams. There should be some alternative method. There haven't been a lot of details about what that method would be, but it was just, I think, an indication of how serious this problem is. And, one thing I'd say is that, there's no question you have to do a better job than the city has done at taking care of the people that it has in its custody. But you know, there are 11,000, 12,000 people on Rikers. That's a lot of people. And I think, you know, something for us to take a step back and look at is whether we really need to have that number of people incarcerated in the city. About 75% of the folks on Rikers in the city's jails haven't been convicted. They're pretrial detainees. And most of them are there because they can't afford bail. And a lot of those bails are the small bails that are assigned in sort of misdemeanor and quality of life cases, which are, you know, too much for poor people to pay and too little for bail bondsmen to cover. So, you know, there's a larger sort of deeper issue here about, you know, whether a system that's going to have that many people crowded into facilities is ever going to be totally free of the kind of abuse and brutality we've been talking about.
Jared Murphy, you have in your article, you talk about the leadership and the correction officers in New York City. What about the leadership in the union? They have a very vocal leadership in the Correction Officers Union. Have you heard anything from him? Do you know anything about what their position is on these reports that have been coming out over the past months?
Well, Norman Seabrook is the head of the Correction Officers Benevolent Association. Yes, he's a very vocal, very powerful union leader. You know, in the reporting by the Times earlier in the summer, he does not come off looking particularly good. He, you know, is seen making kind of, veiled threats to officials who came to check out the situation with mentally ill inmates. I don't know what his reaction has been to de Blasio's latest idea, but I do know generally his defense has been that his officers are trying to deal with an impossible situation, that they don't have enough coverage, that they don't have the resources to deal with mental illness. You know, they are there to be law enforcement officers, not to be treatment providers, and that is something that they are being asked to do. So his complaint is that, whatever problems we're seeing are the outcome of a systemic problem, a situation that the city and the other levels of government have placed both the inmates and the guards in Rikers. That's his case. And, you know, obviously there is something to that. I mean, manpower, person power in the jails is an issue. Resources, obviously, when it comes to mental illness, is clearly an issue. I mean, I did a story many years back about a guy who went to Rikers because of a dispute with a neighbor over a dog coming on his lawn, was sent to the mental illness ward and was beaten to death. So, you know, this is not a new thing. I think what the Times exposed was that it had grown to kind of crisis proportions, at least in the latter part of the Bloomberg years.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Jared Murphy, the executive editor of City Limits, and I would assume that you guys are going to continue watching closely that story about Rikers Island, because there's so many elements to it that we should be paying attention to. As we move forward, I want to shift gears a bit. Another interesting piece that you have in the website in citylimits.org is the report about housing. And the headline reads, "Housing plan targets vacant lots, some neighbors leery. The administration sees city-owned vacant lots as potential sites for affordable housing. Communities that use or hope to use these parcels for gardens see them as something else." Tell us about this. How is this potential clash between local communities who do see very scarce space in their neighborhoods as valuable resources for community building, not necessarily building housing? How does this become a potential clash between the administration and communities?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Mayor de Blasio has a very ambitious plan to build or preserve 200,000 units of affordable housing over 10 years. That's a lot of housing. And the challenge that the city faces is the same challenge that the private market faces, and one of the reasons that rent has shot up in recent years, which is that housing is expensive to build, and one expense in the city is land. There's just not that much of it. One of the reasons why Mayor Ed Koch was able to really begin the city down the path of creating affordable housing in the 80s with this 10-year plan, which, you know, really did stabilize and save several neighborhoods in the city, was that New York had acquired a vast trove of land that it could use for the housing, land that it acquired through people abandoning it during the fiscal crisis, through tax foreclosure. And so that was, you know, those were cards the city could play when it was building the first round of affordable housing. That was less the case for Mayor Bloomberg's round, and it's even less the case now. But there are a few parcels that the city owns that are vacant, and the question is, given de Blasio's intent to create a more dense, and he says more equitable city, whether those spaces will become key players, and I think they probably will be. The question is, you know, how neighborhoods will feel about that. I mean, in some cases, these vacant lots have become community gardens. I should note that not all community gardens would be targeted by this proposal. It depends on which city agency has control of them. Some of them are, you know, community gardens. Some of them are unofficial kind of hangout places. Some of them are spots that folks in the neighborhood have probably identified for years as something they would like to turn into a community garden. And there's always this question of, you know, density is something the city is going to have to deal with more of. But when it comes down to dealing with it on your block, sometimes people, you know, don't like the idea because it can, you know, raise the stress level in a neighborhood and it can eliminate other options. And one of them is open space. So, you know, this is really a minor part or a facet of the larger political problem that de Blasio and his folks are going to have to solve, which is going into the apparently 15 or so neighborhoods they plan to target for, you know, really dense, rich increase in housing, and trying to make those deals acceptable to folks there so there's not a tremendous amount of community opposition. That is what he's pledged to in his plan by having like a community-led process. And I think the gardens and the vacant lots are going to have to be part of that.
It's a tough one because, you know, I know, again, the open space, you know, this idea of density becomes a problem. In my neighborhood a few years ago, a local independent school had a big lot that was, they were using it. They used it as a playground for the school, but then they were selling it. And the city, there was push for developers to go in there and build housing, but certainly not necessarily affordable housing. And the community mobilized and basically were able to generate the resources enough to get the place, to get the space, and now it has just been the expansion of a local park. And those kind of spaces are absolutely necessary in the city, especially when we see so many developments in these tiny little spaces in Manhattan and elsewhere going up in these high-rises that are certainly not benefiting the local communities as much. The Blasio administration is still kind of wavering on what's more significant, what's more important, or it's still not clear.
I think it's going to be, I mean, they have a couple of programs in place. They have a couple of programs that have been discussed. You know, the details are still going to roll in. And I think, you know, with this and all the other aspects of the housing plan, it's really going to be a neighborhood-to-neighborhood battle and decision-making process. I mean, I think it's going to be years before we're able to say what the patterns are. So we really don't know. I think it's going to come down to a block-to-block kind of decision. But you're totally right that this is the kind of thing where, you know, from 15,000 feet, you know, it's just another lot. But when you live there, these are essential. They're what make, you know, some neighborhoods kind of delightful. You know, trees to clean the air, a little green space to give folks a break from kind of the concrete monotony. They're critical. And so this is going to be one of those very interesting trade-offs. I think in some cases the lots will stay and the gardens will remain. In other cases, they won't. It'd be really, it's going to be one of the many needles that de Blasio and his housing people have to thread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because unfortunately what you see is in well-to-do and generally, you know, well-off neighborhoods, you know, there's plenty of space, green space, et cetera, but in a lot of these poor communities around the city, there's less. And so the idea is just to kind of occupy some of that space to build affordable housing in lieu of other options. I think that creates major tensions within certain communities. Jarrett Murphy is the executive editor of City Limits, citylimits.org. It's, if you don't know about it, again, we're partnering with them and hopefully having regular reporting from City Limits on the morning show here on WBAI from now on. I think the source, it's a great source of investigative reporting about issues related to the city, development, economic issues, etc.